case. All right, welcome back, everybody. Really wonderful. I'm so excited to be back. But the truth of the matter is we're in deep trouble already. Before we get started, we're in trouble because Rosh Hashanah is next week. It would have been nice. It would have been nice had we had weeks and weeks to prepare, weeks and weeks to get ourselves ready for this very important season on the calendar. But like many things in today's world, everything has to be instantaneous. We need it now. Not let's go and work our way towards it. It's here and now. So for all intents and purposes, we have about 45 minutes to an hour as a crash course on how to get ready for Rosh Hashanah this year. So I think that that's important to keep in mind that we will be doing a two-part series. This week, we're going to focus on Rosh Hashanah because it's coming up this Sunday night. And the following Wednesday, we will focus, obviously, on Yom Kippur, which comes up the following Wednesday, Tuesday night, Wednesday. So I'm excited for that. On the same topic, though, on the same note, I should say, after the holidays, after Rosh Hashanah, after Yom Kippur, after Sukkot, after Simchas Torah, after all the holidays, and we finally can get a stretch of a period of time of where we can do it, I have a great topic, a great theme that I am looking forward to sharing with you. I'm working on the exact wording of it, but the topic, and I guess if some of you don't come back after Sukkot, I'll know that it was a failure. but the topic I'm excited about because it's called Touring the Jewish Home. We are going to go around room by room of our homes and to see how much Judaism is really there. It's there for the choosing. Every room in the home is permeating with opportunities to grow in our Judaism. And what we're going to do over the course of the many months over the winter is we're going to go room by room, and I'm going to share and we will have discussions about this. So watch your emails. There'll be more coming about it. So this is a two-part series exclusive for the high holidays, but afterwards we will get on track for the longer period. Okay. The topic tonight, though, is I think something that has bothered many, if not all of us. Does Rosh Hashanah really need to be 2 days? Seriously, isn't one day enough? It's a hard day. And I know that in some circles, they do only celebrate one day. But from an old traditional perspective, even in the land of Israel, it's celebrated for 2 days. Why is that? The Torah tells us that Rosh Hashanah is on the first day of the month, the first day of Tishrei, right? That's when it is. Yet, we celebrate it 2 days. Why is that? Why is that? And especially given the fact that all the other holidays, Pesach, right? Passover, Shavuot, Sukkot, even the last days of Sukkot, which we call Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, it's only outside the land of Israel that we celebrate it 2 days. In Israel, it's one day. So what's up with Rosh Hashanah that even in Eretz Yisrael, even in Israel, they celebrate it for 2 days? What's up with that? So what I'd like to do this evening is to look at it from two, maybe three perspectives. One is practical. The others are much more, as I love to say, taking a step back and delving a little bit deeper. Might there be lessons that we can learn from the fact that it is a two-day holiday and not just the one? So let's do it from a very practical standpoint first. Let's start with this. Why is, in fact, every other holiday, like I said, Passover, Sukkot, all of them outside the land of Israel are celebrated for 2 days, the holiday, yet in Israel it's one. Let me explain for those who may not be familiar. We're given this mitzvah of building a sukkah, of building this temporary dwelling outside of our homes with a flimsy roof, flimsy walls, perhaps. And we go outside into the change of weather. Sometimes it's not so pleasant. And we go outside here in outside the land of Israel. We do it for 8 days. 8 days. The Torah only says it's 7 days. The Torah says the holiday of Sukkot is 7 days. And the way we do the 7 days is day one of the holiday is the actual holiday. Day seven is the actual holiday. And days two through six are known as Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days. They're quasi-holiday. Yes, they have sanctity. Yes, if I am going to eat a meal, I need to do it in the sukkah. But there are things that I'm allowed to do. For example, I can work. I can do things, activities that I'm not allowed to do like on Shabbos or on the actual holiday itself. Days one and seven are like Shabbos for the most part. Days two through six are like, I'll call them Friday. They're Shabbos-like or Shabbos-light, if you want to call it, right? There are things that you're allowed to do. You're not restricted like it would be on the holiday itself. But the actual holiday is only 7 days, days one and seven. And that's how they celebrate it in Israel. However, we who don't live in Israel, what we do is days one and two we treat as the actual holiday. And day seven and eight, we add on eight and treat that as the holiday. Where days three through six are the intermediate days. You following me? Okay, that's true for every holiday. Passover, Shavuot is a two-day holiday, even though the Torah says it's one. In Israel, it's 1 day. The sixth of Sivan, that's Shavuot, one and done. We keep 2 days. Okay, but why? Yet when it comes to the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, everybody keeps two. That's the direction we're going. So where did this concept of a second day come about? So let's do a little historical perspective. We know that the calendar year is divided into 12 months, right? Both in the Gregorian calendar, the secular calendar, as well as the Jewish calendar. Yes, I know there's a leap year where we add another month, but we can deal with that in a moment. Okay? But how does it work, the calendar? So here, Judaism, the Torah tells us that we base ourselves primarily on a lunar cycle. We base our calendar on the moon's cycle, not the sun. We do take that into consideration, which is how a whole leap year concept comes about, of trying to reconcile the lunar year and the solar year. For those who may not be aware, there's an 11-day difference. The lunar cycle, the moon's cycle, is 11 days shorter than the sun's rotation in its year. Whereas a solar year is 365 days. Okay, I'm leaving off the fractions because everybody loves math. 365 days is a solar year. However, a lunar year is only 354. There's an 11-day difference. Okay? But either way, the way we divide it up is into 12 months. 12 months. Well, if you do the math, and I'll spare you, a lunar month is a 29, I'll call it and a half, 29 and a half days, 29 and a half, 24 hour periods that creates a full lunar month, as opposed to a solar month, which is 30 and a half, approximately, days. Okay? So you have 29 and a half days in a lunar year. Well, how did it work? Did you all of a sudden in the middle of the day, all of a sudden flip your calendar? Because, hey, it's 29 and a half days. So you woke up in the morning and it was the last day of the month. And sometime around 1 o'clock or the next month it could have been at 3 o'clock, or the next month could end up being at 3 a.m, right? Wherever that half ends. That means that you flip in the middle? That's weird. You can't do that. You signed a contract in the morning and it was the 29th of the month and you didn't get around to executing it until 2 p.m. when the loan finally came through, and now all of a sudden it's the first of the next month. Well, the date is all wrong. So you can't switch in the middle. So how did it work? So now we have a calendar that makes it a little bit easier. And for the most part, what we do is we alternate months. 1 month, we steal half of the day and we say, forget it. We'll just call it 29 days. And the next day, we'll call the first of the month. But you're missing half a day? Don't worry. We'll make it up. The following month, I'm not going to do 29 and a half. I'm going to take the extra half I stole from the previous month and add it to that one and call it 30 days, 30 full days. And it basically alternates 29, 30, 29, something like that. I'm oversimplifying it, but that's the idea. Even on the solar calendar, we alternate 30 and 31 for the most part. Yes, your Februarys are always, there's always an exception somewhere. But that's the idea. That's because, ladies and gentlemen, we have a fixed calendar. There were very smart people that said, okay, people are going to have trouble with this. If you think 2 + 2 = 4 is challenging, 2 × 2 = 4, how does that work, right? Go try to figure out the calendar. It's quite complex. I actually had a teacher, I'm trying to recall if it was 11th or 12th grade in high school. I had a Judaic studies teacher who took it upon himself to teach us young whippersnappers exactly the formulas necessary to recreate the Jewish calendar. And he gave us all the information. It was very fascinating, very cool. But most people don't enjoy that. And most people are like, okay, just do me a favor, Pam, can you look it up on the calendar? When is Halloween next year? Like, just look it up on the calendar. Who knows? Rosh Hashanah. Do you ever notice Rosh Hashanah is either early or late? It's never on time. It's always early. Oh, it's so early this year. It's always late this year. No. So how did it work? So again, let me do this quickly. Originally, before we had a fixed calendar, the way it worked was as follows. You would have people know, everybody knew that a lunar month was somewhere around 29 something fraction days. It wasn't like somebody said, oh, I saw the new moon. It was on the 17th of the month. Well, you know that guy's talking right out of his gemetloch because that's an impossibility. It has to be somewhere either 29 or 30. It's somewhere in that vicinity, right? It has to be. You can't tell me that you saw that first sliver of the moon when everybody looks outside and it's a full moon. It just doesn't work. But the way it used to be is that you would have people who lived somewhere in the Jerusalem or maybe farther out area who would see up in the sky that first inkling, that first little sliver of the new month, of the new moon. And the obligation was on them to come to Jerusalem, come to the temple in front of the Supreme Court, known as the Sanhedrin. And they would come and they would testify in front of the sages and say, here's what we saw. Now, the sages, who were experts in astronomy, would ask them questions. Did you see it in the western side of the sky or was it on the eastern side? Did you see it closer to the earth or did you see it further up? They knew where the moon should be, based on astronomy. And they would interrogate them until they were convinced that these two witnesses had the truth. They were telling the truth. And then they would declare that day Rosh Chodesh, the new month. That's how it would work. Now, what happens if they didn't come till 2 p.m? They lived all the way up north in Tzvat or Tveria. It took a few hours to get down south to Jerusalem. You know, what if they didn't get till 4 p.m? So you can't split the day necessarily, because everybody's assuming today is a regular day. And now all of a sudden at 4 PM, you tell me it's Rosh Chodesh. I got a million things I got to do on Rosh Chodesh. There's a special offering that needs to be, different prayers are said. I mean, you can't spring that on me. So they declared that they would go ahead and declare that rest of the day, and the next day, officially, that would be now be Rosh Chodesh, the new month. But they didn't have email. They didn't have WhatsApp. They didn't even have texting. Oh, how the Jews suffered, right? So what'd they do? You had to send messages out. You had to get the word out. But that took time. How long did Paul Revere had to drive? You know, how long did it take him to go say the British are coming? Two lamps were, you know, like the yeses, and the one was a no. You had to send messages out throughout the land. And what do you do with the Jews who weren't living in Israel? When are they ever going to find out? You say, Arlene's thinking, okay, I mean, it sounds great, Rabbi, but who cares? So it's Rosh Chodesh. What's the difference? Arlene, I'm glad you asked. The point is very simple. If you don't know when the first of the month is, how are you going to celebrate Passover on the 15th of the month? You don't know what day it is. It could have been the first day, or it could have gotten pushed off one day to the following day if the witnesses came late in the day. So you have really no idea. Is it supposed to be next Tuesday, or is it really Wednesday? It's unclear, because you don't know. If you happen to be very rich and you bought at a great time, like in 1840s, you bought a beautiful home right outside the old city of Jerusalem, which you couldn't have done, by the way, because in 1840, no Jew was allowed to have that property, right? But if somehow you, okay, so you may be found out, but the nice observant Jew who's living in Tveria, who's living up north, by the Rosh HaNikra, or the Jew who's out in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, which is where we all lived. How did they find out when Passover was? They had to know when Rosh Chodesh. So it became, fancy word, a calendrical doubt, a doubt in the calendar. Was it this day or the next? It wasn't 2 days from now, and it wasn't 2 days earlier, because that's impossible. It had to be some one of those 2 days. Therefore, they made a rule. Sages said they were going to observe Rosh Chodesh both days. And therefore, the holidays, which were 14, 15 days later, also needed to be celebrated both days, because you didn't know yet. Maybe. So you say, okay, I think I understand that. But Rabbi, we have a calendar now. Thank you for the introduction of a historical lesson, but it has no relevance in 2022. Oh, but it does. Because even though today we know exactly, because it's not based on witness testimony anymore, it's a fixed calendar that the great man known as Hillel, not the one you're thinking of, a different Hillel, he calculated the fixed calendar the way we have it. This tradition of keeping 2 days because of what was a doubt remains in effect even today, outside the land of Israel. Within the land of Israel, by the 15th of the month, everybody knew. Even the Jew all the way up north in Rosh HaNikra, all the way down south in Beersheba, they could know within 2 weeks. And therefore they knew when Passover was, because they knew when Rosh Chodesh was. So they only had to observe the one day. So all this is great and answers the question for every other holiday, except Rosh Hashanah. Why is Rosh Hashanah? Because it was a doubt, even for the Jew who lived 15 minutes from the temple. Because it was the first of the month. They didn't know necessarily whether it would be at 4 PM and all of a sudden things change. Can you imagine? You have no idea. Rosh Hashanah is coming. Imagine you didn't know it was a fixed calendar and that it starts this Sunday night.
Man knows it.
You're not sure, right? You're not sure. And all of a sudden, you're like, all right, I didn't hear anything at 8 AM. Okay, I'm having my coffee. It's now 12 noon. Joe and Pam want to go for have a lunch together. right? That's what they're going to do. And everything's fine. And they're relaxed because, okay, I haven't heard anything. And then all of a sudden at 5:30, about an hour and 15 minutes before sunset, they're going, oh my gosh, did you see that WhatsApp? It's Rosh Hashanah. Ah, the brisket's not up. What am I going to It's not going to fly. And therefore, even in Israel, where there was a doubt, was it going to be today or tomorrow? They observed both days. Okay? In fact, the Talmud records actual cases of mix-ups where they assumed that it wasn't, and it turned out it was. And obviously, that's a big no-no. Therefore, it was legislated for 2 days of observance. That's the practical reason why to this day, even in Israel, they celebrate Rosh Hashanah 2 days. But I want to take this a little bit further. Because did God not know this is what was going to happen? When God decided that Rosh Hashanah is going to be the first of the month, did he not have an inkling that people were going to be people and this doubtful situation, which he set up? God set it up like this, of where witnesses have to come. And did he not have the foresight to see this was going to be trouble? I'm left with that question, and I have to come with some kind of answer. Why did God arrange this unique situation? There must be a deeper meaning for this 2-day observance. It can't be God didn't know that this doubt was going to creep in. I can't accept that. I can't sleep well at night if that's the final answer. Oops, I didn't think of that ramification. That doesn't sit well. So I'm forced. There must be more. So I'm going to share with you what I think are two and a half insights, perhaps of a deeper meaning. Let's do the following. Many of you have joined me when we went through the letters of the alphabet. Fascinating topic, but fine. But here's what's interesting. If we look at the season that we call the high holiday season, you'll have two different opinions if you were to take a poll. Right? If we did a family feud, we asked 100 Jews. If you had to pick the season, right? Steve Harvey's going to do all this. When is the high holiday season? Some people will tell you it starts on Rosh Hashanah and it ends right after Yom Kippur. There's a good basis to say that because the feeling, the tone of the holidays of Rosh Hashanah, the 10 days of repentance through Yom Kippur, have one flavor, have one feeling. And then Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret and Simchas Torah, they have a different feel. So people differentiate. However, between you, me, and whoever listens to this, that's not really true. The truth of the matter is that it's one season that starts on Rosh Hashanah and ends with Simchat Torah. We in the diaspora outside of Israel, it starts on the first of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, the first of the month. And if you were to count it out, the last day of celebration, the last day of that season is on the 22nd of Tishrei, which would be Simchat Torah. There are 22 days of this season starting from Rosh Hashanah through Simchat Torah. 22 days exactly. Now, I already gave you the final answer. This is like Jeopardy. I gave you the answer. What's the question? The question is, what is the correlation between the 22 letters of the alphabet and the 22 days of this season? Excellent question. You get to go to Final Jeopardy. The answer is it's a one-to-one correspondence. Every single day of the 22 days of our holiday season corresponds to the next letter in the alphabet. Rosh Hashanah corresponds to Aleph, duh, and the second day Rosh Hashanah will correspond to the Bet, and so on and so forth. I don't know if we'll have time at some point to go through how they all match up, but they do. In fact, one of the beautiful expressions we say in relation to Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah is we use the terminology Nagila v'nismecha bach. We will rejoice and celebrate with you, God. But the word bach is bet chaf. Bet and chaf, 2 and 20, 22. We will rejoice with you with these 22 days that correspond to the 22 letters of the alphabet. Okay, so let's see how Rosh Hashanah, days 1 and 2, therefore correspond with the letters Aleph and Bet, right? That makes sense. So if I were to ask you, some of you have heard me say this almost every year we talk about it before Rosh Hashanah, there is one theme that is the epitome of Rosh Hashanah. What is it? What is the theme of Rosh Hashanah?
Repentance.
Repentance. You can do better.
Awesome reverence.
Good answer, but
no. Nope. Okay, somebody else.
Kingship.
Coronation of the king. It is all about sovereignty. God is the master of the universe. It's interesting, Pam, because you're right. Many people do make the equation about repentance. You're not off. It's not a wrong answer. Yeah. The answer truly, though, is before Rosh Hashanah, we should be focused on repentance. The theme of Rosh Hashanah is my taking a step forward and saying, I declare myself a loyal servant to the Supreme Master of the universe. And I am asking of this Master of the universe that I want another year of life so that I can continue to spread your message of your sovereignty. That's what it's about. We make minor changes in the text of the liturgy, and we add the word melech, king, over and over and over again. In fact, in the Amidah, in the Shmona Esrei, the silent and public repetition of that major prayer, the law is that if you forget to add the word or change the word to Melech, King, you have to repeat it again. It is the critical word. The theme is the coronation and of the king, of the sovereign of the universe. If you think about it, it actually answers a different question of why Rosh Hashanah comes before Yom Kippur. Logically, it should be the other way around. Yom Kippur is where I'm asking forgiveness, right? We all know it's the Day of Atonement. God is willing to forgive. What is it that we're asking forgiveness for? Oh, for sins we committed, right? We committed when? Over the last 10 days? Since the new year began? How about the 350 something days since last Yom Kippur? How about last year's sins? When do I ever get forgiveness for that? If I were God, that's a scary thought. But if I were God, logically, I would have put Yom Kippur before Rosh Hashanah. Let me ask forgiveness for the last year's sins, get forgiveness, and then Rosh Hashanah, start a new year, clean slate. Let's do this. But God says, Tachman, you don't know diddly. You missed the point. No, Rosh Hashanah is not a matter of forgiveness. It's not a matter of repentance of, oh my gosh, last year. Before I can come before God and say, please forgive me, don't I have to take a moment to acknowledge there is a God? Whom am I coming before to ask forgiveness? My next door neighbor, because I, by accident, cut up his flowers that were just encroaching on my yard. Okay, that's one kind of forgiveness. But I'm standing before the Supreme Master of the universe, and I'm saying, I messed up. I didn't do what I was supposed to for your sake. First, to appreciate Yom Kippur and whom you have to ask forgiveness from, you have to have a Rosh Hashanah. First, you have to coronate the Supreme Master of the universe. Now you go, I give out. Woe is me. I didn't just mess around with my neighbor. I didn't do what I was supposed to with the King of all kings, the Creator. Yikes. Now I really have what to ask forgiveness for. I had a teacher once who told me, he was talking to the class on this concept, and he said, you know, if you're walking along, at the time, it's so funny, I can give you the example much more relevant today, but at the time, there were no cell phones, no concept that people were on their phones as they're walking, texting, or whatever it is. But nowadays, it's like common practice. People are looking down, and they bump into people. It happens all the time. So you bump into somebody and you knock them down. So you feel bad. You look at the person, you feel bad. And then the person looks up at you and you realize, oh my gosh, do you know who that was? It was the rabbi. Oh my God, I feel even worse. Why? I don't know. But that's the feeling. So you have to know, who did you sin before? Who did you sin against? So you need a Rosh Hashanah before a Yom Kippur, because it's all about coronating the king. Well, if that's so then the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which corresponds to the letter Aleph, if you recall, the letter Aleph is the number one. Numero uno. There is only one numero uno, and that is God. In fact, in Judaic literature, God is called, listen to the word, it's so beautiful, God is called Alufo Shel Olam. Alufo sounds like the word Aleph. Alufo Shel Olam. God is the one of the world. That is what God is. There is nothing in our world that is singular except for God. Everything in our physical world has a complement. It's a rule of physics. For every action, there's an equal yet opposite reaction. It has to be male, female, night, day. It just, that's the world in which we live. Everything is at least two, except for God, because God is the Aleph of the world. So it makes a lot of sense when you look at the 22 days of the holiday season, where day one, Rosh Hashanah day one, corresponds to the concept of an Aleph. God is number one. Okay, good, Tachman. What are you going to do with the second day, Rosh Hashanah, now? Ah, the second day is Bet. For those who can recall, when we discussed the Aleph Bet, in fact, that we call it that, it's interesting. In English, we call it the ABCs. We use three letters. In Hebrew, we always call it Aleph Bet, the two letters. We don't call it the Aleph Bet Gimel. The Aleph Bet. Because Aleph and Bet have a relationship. When we went through it, I quoted from you that passage of the Talmud that paired the letters. Aleph went with Bet. Gimel went with Dalet. And that's how it went through all the letters. What's the relationship? Because the letter Bet stands for, as the Talmud says, Aluf Bina. Bina is understanding, wisdom, intellect, and analysis. We need to apply the Bet to the Aleph. What does that mean? We've all had enough experiences in life to know that even if somehow I believe and I know that there is a God in this world, there are experiences that we either have personally or we know of where that begins to, we question it. Things happen. Was God really there? How did God allow that to happen? This seems so bad. But as a believing person, we are required, and it takes work, but we need to analyze and to see and to know that God is truly the king, even when olam. Remember the phrase? God is alufo shel olam. God is the one of the world. Olam is the world. But the word olam in Hebrew, the root of the word means concealed, hidden. He'elam means concealed or hidden. God is the one that is in the world concealed. You're not walking down the street and it becomes blatantly obvious. Oh my God, look at God here. God is here. God is everywhere. Yeah, some people are able to do that. But I think for the average person, for most of us, we struggle with that. And it's not blatantly obvious. It's hidden behind the scenes. It's somewhat veiled, hidden. The Aleph says there's God, one, but the Bet says you have to analyze and find God even when it's he'elam, even when it's hidden. To know that at every moment and in every situation, it's hard to see sometimes, but there's never a moment, never a situation where God is not there. So perhaps the message of a two-day Rosh Hashanah is not the first day being critical, although it is. That's where there is a God and a recognition and my acknowledgement and coronation of that God. But perhaps day two is an even deeper lesson that there is a God even when I have to dig deep to find that God hidden in our world. One day is not enough because that's where the cases are obvious, where the situation is so crystal clear. Of course there's God, saved by a miracle. I'll just tell you very quickly. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I had a medical incident. It was in camp. It was at a Shabbaton. I was with the kids. Thank God it was Shabbos morning. All the kids were sleeping. Had to go to the hospital. The following week was another Shabbaton. And my wife and I talked about it. And we decided that it really was the best situation that I would go back. We would go back the following Shabbos. Because I wasn't going to work. It'll be relaxing. It'll be comfortable. I don't have to walk so far to shul. All the, right? So I went back, but I promised I wasn't going to work. I would just be there. Comes toward the end of Shabbos, and I want to say something. I want to talk to the camp. I wanted to share what my observations of my incident were. And I wanted them to walk away with a message. And I told them the following. I wasn't planning on sharing this, but whatever. It's important to know it. I said to them, I don't understand. It was a week of questions that I had. I said, I want to be very clear. The questions I had did not relate to the question of why did God do this? That I have no questions. God knows best, and God, for whatever the reason, which is unbeknownst to me, felt this is what I needed. Okay, I can accept that. But my question was, why did it happen here at Shoresh? Why did it happen here in Adamstown, Maryland, in Frederick, Maryland? Why? I live in Baltimore. There are trauma centers in a 15, 20 minute radius all over the place. Not a knock against Frederick Memorial, but it's not a world-class trauma center that people come from all over the world to go to. So why did it happen here? Not only that, I asked myself, had I been in Baltimore when this happened, my brother who works on the Jewish Volunteer Ambulance Service would have been the first one there in a matter of moments and would have taken me to the trauma. But why? These were questions that ran through my head. And I told everybody there, we're talking about 250 people, maybe more. I said, I will tell you the answer. The answer is, and I don't know, but I feel in my heart of hearts, God had a reason for me to have this incident, for me to have this medical issue. And he wanted me to survive. And he put me in the one place in the world that I have more merits, more mitzvot to my credit than any other place in the world. You know where that is? In Adamstown, Maryland, where hundreds of kids are davening. Hundreds of kids are making brachos, where hundreds of kids are learning Torah. Hundreds. Every day are answering Amen. God said, I have to give this to you, Tachman. One day you'll understand why, but I'm going to give it to you in a situation that is to your benefit. Yeah, Baltimore's a great city. It's a wonderful place, trauma centers. But I don't know if I have the same level of merit in Baltimore that I do in Frederick. Not only that, for those who may not know, Frederick Memorial has two specialties. One of them is strokes, and the other is heart catheterization, which is what I needed. That's what I needed, and God put me in the place. Now you tell me, that's not miraculous? That's not recognizing there's a God in this world? There are many people who get what I got and don't survive. They don't make it to the hospital. This is what it means to analyze and say, yeah, I don't understand all of it. God is concealed. God is hidden. I don't understand it all. But I'm going to look deep. I'm going to look hard and say, yeah, in my situation, some people would say, what kind of craziness? At 53, you get that kind of incident? Ah, ridiculous. I looked at it just the opposite. I found reason. I found purpose. I saw God in that concealment. That's what the second day of Rosh Hashanah is. Not the Aleph. It's the Bet. It's looking and analyzing where it's hidden. Can you see God there? That's the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Let me add one more piece. I want my money's worth. I want a full hour. Although Rosh Hashanah is 2 days, it has an interesting quirk, a very interesting quirk in Jewish law. For example, I mentioned all the other holidays, Sukkot, Pesach, right? The 2 days. There are Jewish law differences between day one and day two. For example, day two has more leniencies than day one when it comes to medicine. Okay. Again, we're not talking about life-threatening or even potentially. I'm talking about if I just have a headache and I could use 2 Tylenol, right? If it's the first day of Sukkot, first day of Pesach, unless it's so bad, it's a migraine that I'd have to go to bed to lay down or whatever. If it's just an inconvenience, I won't take the 2 Tylenols on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, on the first day of Pesach. The second day, I would take it. Understand why. It's not just because I did it already. Remember, the second day of the festivals is a rabbinic enactment because of some doubt. Remember, that's how this whole thing started. So when it comes to a doubtful situation, I'm going to be more lenient when it comes to my health. Right? Does that make sense? However, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah have the same status. In halacha, in Jewish law, it's called Yoma Arichta, one long day. It's not 2 days. It's one long day. Very long day for most of us in the shul, that's for sure. But you got to do it twice, but it's part of one long day. But it's such a beautiful concept because don't think of it, and this is really the second point that I want to make. Yes, we think of it as 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, but what if we change it a little bit? Let's do a paradigm shift. Don't look at it as 2 separate days and day two is just a reenactment of day one. That's how we get into trouble. Let's be honest with ourselves. If it really was one long, great adventure, you went to Six Flags or you went and you had a 48 hour pass, you wouldn't look at it as 2 days. You'd look at it as one full fun-filled adventure for 48 hours. That's how we would look at it. I can't say Rosh Hashanah is a 48-hour fun-filled experience. I won't go that far. However, maybe we need to adjust our perspective and look at the 2 days as one unified day that has two different focuses. Foci, not sure what the English word is, but where you have two different ideas that work together and complement each other as part of one whole. See, then it's not the same. I'm doing twice. It's part A and part B. On day one, I have a certain focus, and on day two is a similar but a different focus. Then it's not just, oh, I got to do the same thing twice. For me, just to contrast it, the two seders that I run, I find very challenging. The first night, it's new, it's exciting, I want to share insights, right? And then you go through the whole day, and then you're like, okay, we can do this. Psych myself for Seder number two. But it's exactly the same. Okay, maybe the people are different. I try to choose different insights, right? But for all intents and purposes, it is exactly the same. There's nothing different about Seder number two as it was Seder number one. Not when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days are really a merging of two concepts that go together as one whole. Okay, it's going to blow your mind, but I'm going to do it anyway. The Arizal, the great Kabbalist, the Arizal, tells us a very cryptic idea. And he says that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah represent the two sisters, Leah and Rachel, Leah and Rachel. The two sisters from whom the majority of the Jewish people come from. Eight of the 12 tribes come from these two ladies. Leah had 6 children and Rachel had 2. So the vast majority of the Jewish people come from these two ladies who were sisters. Now, there's a million pieces that we can go into what the relationship is. But what's fascinating, the Arizal tells us, day one corresponds to Leah, who Yaakov married first, although through trickery and all that, great uncle Lavan decided to play the games. But Leah represents Rosh Hashanah day one, and Rachel, Rachel, is day number two. There's a lot that can be said, but my goal is to do the following. At the end of the day, Rachel and Leah really unified as sisters. Rachel gave up her code that she had made specifically with Jacob. She gave it up to her sister so that she not be embarrassed. Yes, there were tension-filled moments when Leah had numerous children and Rachel had none, no question. But at the end, they were 100% unified as sisters. One of them, Leah, represents the concept of the hidden world. Rachel is more of the physical world, the one that we see, that's revealed. I can get further into it, but just hear me out. The two sisters as unified represent the following, and I'll read you the quote that I found written so beautifully by somebody who quoted that Arizal. If we only live in the moment without thinking about the consequences of our actions, then what are we? Yet, what do we accomplish by always planning ahead and worrying about the future, never allowing ourselves to take a deep breath and being present in the moment? Beautiful synthesis. If you live your life for what will be, then you're missing the here and now. And if you only focus on the here and now with no eye to the future, then what kind of life is that? You need both parts, Rachel and Leah. You cannot focus on just one. The first day of Rosh Hashanah, we reflect on where are we going? Where are we headed for the coming year? What is the perspective of our life? And then the second day asks us and invites us with the opportunity to be present and experience standing before the king we just coronated and committing ourselves, I'm going to put it into action. Day one is the big picture, global perspective. Day two is the realization that I have to do that. What am I going to commit? We all talk about New Year's resolutions. You've heard me say this before. Make one, not five, not 15. It's not going to work. Pick one small commitment, but you've got to commit to it. Not a, I'd like to lose weight in the coming year. That's not going to work. If you want it, if that's your commitment, then you're going to trim down, then you trim down spiritually too. Make a commitment, not only in the physical realm, but in the spiritual realm. Make a commitment. Do that on Rosh Hashanah. That's what counts the most. Day one gives you the perspective that I need to have a long range vision here. Some strategic plan. What am I going to accomplish? I need to accomplish something because God has me here for a reason. And then day two is that commitment that I'm going to put it into practice. It's fascinating. The gematria, the numerical value of the words Rosh Hashanah is 861. 861 is the same if you were to add up all the numbers from 1 to 41. Now, why do I choose 41? Because 41 is the Hebrew word aim, mother. Rachel and Leah are the mothers of Klal Yisrael. They're the mothers of the Jewish people. If you add up 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 38 plus 39 plus 40 plus 41, aim, the mother, it's the same numerical value as Rosh Hashanah as it is Beit HaMikdash, the temple. That's the concept here. Vision. Where do we need to go with all of this? And how am I going to emulate the mothers? How am I going to do what they did, having a vision and putting it into practice? That's what we need to do. Both days of Rosh Hashanah are necessary. It's not enough just one. You need both. You need a Leah and a Rachel. You need an Aleph and a Bet. And you need to do it because that's the tradition we have since way back when the temple stood and we had a Supreme Court. Those are the three reasons I wanted to leave you as to why one day of Rosh Hashanah is just not enough. Any questions? Not what you were expecting, I know. But hey, that's my job.
I don't know if this is a question, more of a comment possibly. I'm not sure. Okay. I think it's fitting together. You're thinking of Rosh Hashanah and you're thinking of renewal. So it's then the renewal of your relationship with God.
100%.
100%. With the renewal, the word renewal comes up, the renewing.
So the word Rosh, Rosh, it means head, but it also means the start.
Right.
This is it. This is the starting point of where I renew the commitments.
Right.
That's exactly what it's all about. Any other thoughts? No? Okay, great. Well, wonderful. I appreciate everybody taking the time this evening. And we will meet again. We will meet again, God willing, next Wednesday night, again at 8:00. Same Shoresh Zoom channel, same time, everything. All right? Perfect. And I think the topic next week is A Tale of Two Goats. A Tale of Two Goats. That's next week. All right?
Yeah.
All right, my pleasure, everybody.